Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing lawyers for global challenges.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Dick Cheney, notoriously reclusive while in office, seems to be everywhere now. Here he was with Face the Nation's Bob Schieffer this past Sunday.
If I don't speak out, then where do we find ourselves? Then the critics have a free run, and there isn't anybody there on the other side to tell the truth.
You can almost hear the former vice president saying, "The truth, you can't handle the truth." He's going after President Barack Obama, telling us we're less safe with him in office, forcing the new administration to engage with him, and forcing the Republican Party to come to grips with the reality of Dick Cheney, one of the least popular public figures in America, as its high-profile spokesman. This hour, On Point, we're looking at former Vice President Dick Cheney out of office and on the warpath. Joining me now from New York is Bart Gellman, diplomatic and Pentagon correspondent for The Washington Post. He is author of Angler, the Dick Cheney Vice Presidency. Bart Gellman, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Let's listen back to a big opening salvo. It wasn't the first, but early on. This is back in the middle of March. Dick Cheney on CNN saying that President Obama's policies will make the American people vulnerable to a terrorist attack.
I think those programs were absolutely essential to the success we enjoyed of being able to collect the intelligence that let us defeat all further attempts to launch attacks against the United States since 9/11. I think that's a great success story. It was done legally. It was done in accordance with our constitutional practices and principles. President Obama campaigned against it all across the country, and now he's making some choices that, in my mind, will in fact raise the risk to the American people of another attack.
He campaigned on it, President Obama, that is, changing national security policy, interrogation policy. Now he's doing it, and Dick Cheney's upset about it. Bart Gellman, you know him well through your work in this biography of him as vice president. Let's just go to motivations first. What do you see up with the vice president? What is driving him? Maybe it's obvious, maybe it's not. How do you read it?
There's a tendency, because of Cheney's secrecy and sort of general reclusiveness, to always look for hidden motives with this guy. Mm-hmm. In this case, I think it's perfectly obvious, and I think it's exactly what he says. He really cares about the policies of which he was the architect, that range from detention to interrogation to warrantless domestic surveillance. He believes they're all essential. He has a very dark view of human nature and the requirements of fighting the bad guys, and he thinks that Obama is going the wrong direction. And he used to be able to make things happen by doing them quietly behind the scenes. Right now, the way he can make things happen, the way he can contribute to the direction of the country, is to speak out, and that's his view.
Does it mean something, anything, nothing to him that Obama was elected in November? As Dick Cheney says, Obama promised to make these changes. Now he's making them. Cheney's upset with that, but does it mean nothing to him that he has the mandate of Democratic public vote and support behind him?
Dick Cheney has a very complicated relationship with the idea of a mandate or of what votes and elections count for. He believes that voters get to choose their leader, and he does not believe that voters know all that much about individual policies, or frankly, that politicians speak with any specificity or candor during election campaigns. He thinks that the real hard work of governance is best left to experts, and that he understands what needs to be done. He just doesn't believe that voters have said, here's a menu of political choices that we're making right now in terms of substantive details of policy. He doesn't actually think that we voters or journalists or any other outside observers are even qualified to make those choices. And so he considers this whole question of how you protect the country to be on a completely different plane than electoral politics.
He's got a lot of people really upset, some applauding, but many saying, what is going on here? Why is an out-of-office vice president making so much noise? Here's a little tape from Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, who was former chief of staff to Colin Powell, who's had a difficult relationship with Dick Cheney, though Dick Cheney, as you've pointed out, Bruce, first made him a four-star general. This is Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson on the Rachel Maddow Show last month with a harsh critique of Dick Cheney's recent press offensive.
He looks like Batman with without Bruce Wayne's principles, or maybe more accurately, the Joker with a straight face. I don't know why, though, people give him so much airtime. This is the man who, after all, said we know with absolute certainty Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. We know he has an active nuclear program. We know he has contacts with al-Qaeda. This is a man who has told more lies from a public pulpit than almost anyone else I know. Why does the media give him so much airtime?
Well, maybe because he's the former vice president and he's talking real loud. And maybe, Bart Gumman, because some are now saying he's actually affecting Obama administration policy. People are pointing in particular, right or wrong, to President Obama's decision to push against release of the detainee abuse photos that are still under wraps, and saying, hey, this is the influence of Dick Cheney's press campaign.
Well, I think you have to give him credit for effectiveness. He starts from the position of being actually the most unpopular vice president in the history of modern polling, and with a sort of public standing that's climbed back to about 30% positive against the most popular recent president, and yet he is affecting the debate. I don't know whether his words had anything to do with Obama's decision not to release the photographs, but Cheney has already placed Obama on the defensive and his people on the defensive. He has shifted the debate to whether harsh interrogation works. He's demanded more information to be released. There's now a big debate about whether that's going to happen. And so, in fact, he's moved the public conversation to some extent in the direction he wants to move it. Again, he's not trying to score political points. He's not running for office himself. And although he's fervently a Republican, I don't think that he imagines he is doing this to help the party in some way position itself. He is trying to bring about what he considers the right result. The thing you need to understand about Cheney and the story that I tell in Angler is that he is both sort of operationally, tactically, very gifted. He's very good at working behind the scenes, at working over, around, and through his opponents. On the one hand, and he is also a zealot. He has very strong and rather extreme principles in the context of American politics, and he knows exactly how to move from point A to point B. Most zealots aren't great tacticians, and most great tacticians are pragmatists. And so, when you have the combination that Cheney presents, you have a guy who's really going to move the needle on history.
In whatever direction. Bart Gellman, stand by. We've got a lot to talk about in this hour. We're going to hear in a few minutes from conservative columnist Mona Charon. But first, with us now from Washington is Jane Mayer, staff writer for The New Yorker. She writes on politics and the war on terror, as the Bush administration dubbed it. She's author of The Dark Side, the inside story of how the war on terror turned into a war on American ideals. Out in paperback this month. Jane Mayer, thanks very much for being with us.
Great to be with you.
Is Dick Cheney moving the needle again right now? Is he moving the Obama administration, Jane, or the debate over whether or not Bush administration policy on coercive interrogation was right?
Well, he's obviously certainly trying. I don't think any of us know for sure why Obama flipped on the issue of releasing the photos of abusive treatment of prisoners in Iraq. It sounds like it was actually the military, particularly General Odierno, who changed Obama's mind on that, rather than former Vice President Dick Cheney. But he's certainly getting himself lots of attention. He's highly entertaining, and you know, I think in answer to Colonel Wilkerson, it's so unusual to have a former leader in a past administration who won't just kind of follow the usual etiquette and just be quiet and let the new winners of the consensus in the country rule. It's you know, he's creating a lot of attention for himself by doing this.
He says he's not going to roll over, and he's outraged that there's talk of potential prosecution of Bush-era administration officials over allegations of torture. If there were such prosecutions, if that should come to pass, Jane, is he on the short list?
Yes, he is. And I think, you know, while I agree with everything that Bart said, I would add that I think there's an additional motivation here, whether or not former Vice President Cheney recognizes it consciously or not. He's not just fighting for principle. This is an incredibly self-serving campaign he's waging, both for his own legacy, and face it, legally, he is in jeopardy, as are a number of other people from the former administration. I wouldn't be surprised from the interviews I've done with international lawyers that there's a likely possibility there will be international arrest warrants sworn out for a number of former lawyers in the Bush administration, including Cheney's former chief of staff David Addington and his henchmen, really. The temperature is heating up for some kind of process of accountability to hold the people, including Cheney, accountable for making choices that wound up with the United States embracing a torture policy that violated several hundred years of principle and idealism. So, I mean, he's really got a lot at stake here personally.
We've got a lot more to look at on the legal front, the national security front, and the political front, not least. Jane Mayer is with us. Her big book, The Dark Side, is just out in paperback. Joins us today from Washington, Bart Gellman with The Washington Post, author of Angler, The Dick Cheney Vice Presidency, is here. When we come back, we'll hear from Mona Charon, nationally syndicated conservative columnist. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. A little bit more from CBS's Face the Nation on Sunday, arguing that policies the Bush administration put in place kept the country safe and that the new Obama administration may be endangering that safety.
To the extent that those policies were responsible for saving lives, that the administration is now trying to cancel those policies or end them, terminate them, then I think it's fair to argue, and I do argue, that that means in the future, we're not going to have the same safeguards we've had for the last 8 years.
So watch out, says Dick Cheney. There could be an attack, and if there is, it'll be Obama's fault for changing these policies. And not afraid to wade into politics, he was asked, who's more your Republican, Rush Limbaugh or former four-star general Colin Powell? Here he is.
In terms of being a Republican, I'd go with Rush Limbaugh, I think. My take on it was Colin had already left the party. I didn't know he was still a Republican.
You know, so you think that he's not a Republican?
I just noted he endorsed the Democratic candidate for president this time, Barack Obama. I assume that that's some indication of his loyalty.
There he is, Dick Cheney, with Bob Schieffer over the weekend. We've got a comment here at Twitter, at On Point Radio. Cheney had 8 years to make the case for torture. He's now on every TV channel daily. His 15 minutes are long over. Let's move on. But Bart Gellman, that's not easy when it's the former vice president of the United States who was right in the middle of it.
Well, of course, the absence of a consensus national leader on the Republican side gives Cheney more opportunity and, in his own mind, I think more responsibility to speak up right now. And, when the Republicans have a clear small field of national leaders, they will step up, and I think Cheney will probably be happy to step away. He would be very unhappy, though, if the Republican Party decided that its future was in moderating, in going toward the center, in finding middle ground with Democrats. He is a guy who believes that you stand by your guns come what may. And by the way, I think that Jane's interesting point about the possibility of prosecutions in some ways makes my point as well as rebuts it, because while it may be that there is some potential for legal jeopardy for Cheney and people who worked for him and with him, either here or overseas, any lawyer who was advising Cheney and who was concerned about his own exposure would tell him to shut up, as in fact John Yoo and Jay Bybee and Steve Bradbury
would tell Bart.
Would tell Cheney, don't speak out. If you're worried about legal liability,
if you're worried about
prosecution, you better keep a low profile, hunker down, don't say anything that either riles them up or can be used against you. And that's exactly what many of the lawyers Jane is talking about are doing now. Cheney is going out there, rather uncharacteristically, I think, for a politician, and saying, you know, it wasn't just them who did it. I did it. They did what I told them to. I stand behind it. We did the right thing. That he's exposing himself more to some extent.
But maybe he thinks he can work the jury, sort of change the whole chessboard of a conversation. Jane?
Yeah, I mean, what I think is that this whole question of whether there'll be any legal repercussions for anybody in the Bush administration, it's more of a political question than it is a legal question. It's a question of political will. Will Eric Holder, the Attorney General, have the, you know, willpower or whatever to press charges against anybody? Will Congress really hold hearings that are tough, like the Church Committee hearings were? These kinds of questions come down to a lot of where public opinion is. If the public demands some kind of accountability, there will be more repercussions for Cheney and others. If Cheney can scare the country into thinking that Obama is weakening the country by not going along with these policies, and that we're in peril, and that we shouldn't ask these questions, we should just walk on, as Peggy Noonan said recently in a talk show, and not ask these questions or pull up these rocks and see what's under them. If he can convince people that this was the right thing, then there will be fewer repercussions for him. So I think he's playing to the jury, and the jury is the American public.
He's certainly got supporters with big megaphones. Here's some reciprocal love from Rush Limbaugh.
What motivation does Dick Cheney have to go out and say these things? Is it possible that Dick Cheney is motivated by national interest? Is it possible that Dick Cheney is motivated by love of and for his country?
Mona Charon joins us now from Great Falls, Virginia, nationally syndicated columnist, author of Useful Idiots and Do-Gooders. Mona, welcome back to On Point. Thanks very much for being with us. What do you see going on with the former vice president in his very significant public exposure now?
Well, I think it's interesting that an administration which many on both sides of the political spectrum had faulted for its failure in public diplomacy, failure to speak up forcefully for its point of view when it was being criticized, now, once out of office, is finally sort of speaking up, making its case. The
interesting in a good way or a bad way?
Well, I think that it isn't really... I tend to agree with Rush Limbaugh that he is motivated by a sense. I don't know his motivations, can't look into his heart, but it seems that he truly believes that he did the right thing, that there is a case to be made for the actions that they took. I would add that what the current flap we are currently seeing over Nancy Pelosi and what she did or didn't know tends to suggest that any sort of a retrospective witch hunt about, turning over rocks, as Jane Mayer said, is going to be fairly limited, because there are going to be Democrats in leading positions who may not want to go back and turn over those rocks, because now that, in the sunny uplands of peace and a lack of fear of an attack, we suddenly have decided, everyone seems to have decided, that harsh interrogation techniques are beyond the pale, whereas at the time, people had a very different view, including leading Democrats.
Mona, let me ask you, have the former president, George W. Bush, and Cheney split over this kind of public fire from Cheney?
Oh, it seems they have. Look, the former president, like his father, has a certain code that he follows, and he believes that it is not his place to criticize his successor, just as if you'll recall, when he came into office, he declined to criticize his predecessor. There was a lot of encouragement for him to say some harsh things about Bill Clinton, and if you'll recall, when President Clinton left office, there was a huge scandal about the pardons that he had issued and the behavior, his behavior in the latter stages of his presidency, but George W. Bush was silent about all of that, similarly now, he refuses to say anything critical about his successor. That's his code, and that's what he thinks is right. Everyone has to follow his own conscience. Cheney does not take that view and believes that it is important to make the case. Look, one of the things that I think exercised Cheney and others is that the president, when he was arguing that the harsh interrogation techniques were ineffective, released memos only on one side of the question. He only released those memos that detailed what was done, but he declined to release the memos that, according to Cheney and even to Dennis Blair, who is the current president's director of national intelligence, and according to George Tenet, the previous head of the CIA, that these techniques actually did save lives. Cheney claims they saved thousands of lives. Certainly, the pressure that Cheney is bringing is for the president President Obama to release all the memos that are relevant to this question, so that voters can make up their minds and see a full picture.
Let's look at that, Jane Mayer. There's this notion here that that Cheney pushes that there's a balance that Obama is hiding here. I mean, maybe it's on Capitol Hill now. Republicans are under pressure. Now Pelosi's under pressure, too, for what did she know and when did she know it. There's a memo that sounds pretty bad about what it permitted on interrogation or torture. Cheney says, well, there's another memo saying that all this worked out just great. Why won't Obama release it? Is that out there?
Well, I'm all with Cheney on this issue. I'm in favor as a reporter of releasing all the information on this program that doesn't, you know, put America in any kind of particular national security
But
peril.
Maybe Cheney ordered that memo up in the year.
He did order the memo up, definitely. It was in 2004, and it was after the CIA's own inspector general raised question about this program, saying both he thought that it was illegal and he also thought that it had gone way beyond the pale and that there was no not enough evidence that it was working right. And so Cheney ordered up a study that justified the program. That's what they're talking about. Ron Wyden, who's a senator on the Intelligence Committee, is quoted this morning in the Washington Post, I think, talking about how he has seen these so-called, you know, the memos that Cheney's talking about, and that in his view, there's zero reason to think that they justified this program. And in fact, same with Senator Rockefeller, who was the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee.
So why isn't the memo out there? Why hasn't Obama put it out?
I think that this issue of declassifying material from the CIA is creating a lot of problems and friction inside the CIA. I mean, we saw that Leon Panetta did not want the Justice Department memos out either. These things are very explosive because they show, a clandestine program that is going to turn the world's stomach. It's much like these photos that Obama today decided not to release. It's going to inflame anti-American sentiment to some extent. I think personally that America shows its great strength by releasing things like this and saying, if we made mistakes, we will learn from them, we will reform ourselves, we're open with the world, we're a transparent democracy. I think that's a very attractive image of the country. But so I'm with Cheney. Release them.
Jane Mayer, Mona Cher, and Bart Gumman, let's hear from some of our listeners. Waterloo, Iowa. Karen, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My son was in Afghanistan at the time the story leaked by Newsweek that the Quran was being flushed down the toilet. His group was scheduled for redeployment at that time. Based on the release of that story, convoys were attacked, schedules had to be entirely revamped, and because of the riots that ensued in those provinces, many civilians lost their lives and were affected.
Do you blame Dick Cheney? Do you blame Dick Cheney for a Quran in the toilet in Afghanistan for that story?
Let me finish my first point.
Yes, please.
Tom, if you would, please.
Yeah.
Okay. Based on what we know that terrible things occurred and we acknowledge them and we don't want them to reoccur. But re-inciting, visiting them, I think, is without merit at this point. We move forward. We change our policies, we tell the world that we're doing it, and we benefit, and we don't put those individuals who are volunteers for our country at risk in the process.
So are you with Dick Cheney now or against him, Karen? I can't figure it out.
Dick Cheney is someone who sides himself with Rush Limbaugh. No, I'm not with Dick Cheney. My point of view comes entirely from a different perspective as a mother who has a son currently in the military.
Karen, we got it. Thank you very much for your call. Bart Gellman, I'm not sure how to look at this one. Dick Cheney, I mean, he put a lot of troops out there, and he says history is going to, you know, be on his side. Maureen Dowd, vicious, I mean, just absolutely slamming him this week, saying history's already decided, Mr. Cheney. You put America back on its heels on a lot of fronts and blew it. Is it still an open question? He clearly thinks so.
Are you saying, is it an open question whether those policies worked?
Dick Cheney's saying what we did worked, and it's being undercut now, and Obama's put us on a trail of peril.
Well, look, take the just the question of keeping the country safe from attacks here rather than, I mean, to stick with what he's really talking about now. How do you get information? How do you protect the public? The kind of memo that he wants to release, almost no matter what it says, can't resolve the question because you can't replay history. You can't try it with two different scientific experiments. You can't say, what would have happened if we took this approach rather than that one in interrogating Abu Zubaydah? What would have happened if we had found this out, this little piece of information on this date rather than that date? We can't know whether the plots that were detected were serious or would have gone very far. We can't know whether using different approaches would have obtained additional information. And so you can't actually it's what the historians would call counterfactual. On the other hand, I am a little bit tired of the sort of typical debate in this whole situation in which people say, look, torture never works. Torture is stupid. Torture is a bad idea. Because then you're putting not only sort of illegal or immoral conduct, you're attributing that to other people, but you're also saying it was pointless. It was brutal for no reason. There are certainly cases in which we could stipulate that coercion works. You know, here's a locked file. What's the password?
But you've got to look at it.
Where's the account number and so on? What I'm saying is you have to have an honest debate. You have to say, are we prepared to be that kind of country that does those kind of things, even if it does work?
Bart Gellman, to have an honest debate, we have to listen to, I guess, testimony just yesterday from two who were involved in it. Here's FBI investigator Ali Soufan testifying right there on harsh interrogation tactics, saying they don't work.
These techniques, from an operational perspective, are slow, ineffective, unreliable, and harmful to our efforts to defeat al-Qaeda.
And here's Philip Zelikow, former counsel to Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, testifying to the same committee about his attempts to stop the enhanced interrogation techniques.
The U.S. government, over the past 7 years, adopted an unprecedented program in American history of coolly calculated dehumanizing abuse and physical torment to extract information. This was a mistake, perhaps a disastrous one.
Jim, remember, we've got half a minute before the break. Dick Cheney is working that question mark over harsh interrogation, whether or not it worked very hard here. Is it still an open question in your mind?
I think it's very misleading to say that it always worked as he has. There's plenty of evidence, including bipartisan study by the Senate Intelligence Committee, of a case of Ibn Sheikh al-Libi that shows it definitely did not work. In fact, it got us bad information. It got us information that helped lead us into the war in Iraq falsely, and the man recanted later because he said he had to make it up because he was being tortured. There's information on both sides of this, and it certainly doesn't all stack up on Cheney's side at all.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about former Vice President Dick Cheney on the warpath for his legacy. Let's get a call from Twin Mountains, New Hampshire, and Jim. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Tom, how are you?
All right. What do you see, Jim?
Well, I think that Mr. Cheney's responding to all the attacks that have come from the left. They've been very prevalent. And like any other American, he should be allowed to defend himself. The left is insisting that he goes away and is not part of the discussion, but it's focused on him and the past administration. And we've seen other people, such as Jimmy Carter, Al Gore, Bill Clinton, that have come out of the past, and we hear their voices trying to influence policy. So I think he's well within his right, and I'm glad to see him do it.
But should there be a decent interval? I mean, you say attacks from the left, but Barack Obama was elected by the nation as president. He's changing policy. He said he would. Cheney's attacking him for that. Should a sitting vice president sort of, is there some decent interval of silence to let a newly elected, new administration have its swing at bat? What do you say,
well,
Jim?
Possibly. I think that the attacks have been so prevalent from the media and so vicious that he has no other choice but to come out and defend himself. And like I said, I'm glad to see him do it.
Bart Gellman, how do you look at the record here? Is Dick Cheney within his rights, within precedent, to be out there swinging so hard, so much, so early? Or, is it unseemly, or is it just, the way of the world?
Well, I'm certainly no judge of seemliness. I'm not going to be Miss Manners in this debate. I think that it is atypical what Cheney is doing. He is, and mainly because it's earlier. Certainly, the caller's right to say that Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, and Al Gore have all become, in their post-White House days, strong critics of the sitting administration, or the then-sitting administration of George W. Bush. But they waited a while. They waited longer than Cheney did, and I suppose that Cheney would be all for decent intervals if he didn't have very strong motives to do something sooner. And he does. He thinks that the issues are, and they range from what should be done now to whether some of the people working for him should face consequences in terms of criminal charges or disbarment or disciplinary action by Justice Department's Office of Professional Responsibility, that any or all of those, in his own mind, outweigh the sort of soft tradition of waiting a little while before you talk.
Let's go to Gwen in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Gwen, you're on the air.
Hi. I would like to weigh in on the side of feeling monumentally less safe because of Bush-Cheney torture techniques. One particular example is that there are actual terrorists in Spain that judges wish to try, but they cannot be tried because they were in American custody and were tortured, and the information that was obtained from them through torture is inadmissible in most, in courts throughout the world. Therefore, they will most likely go free because they were because of the treatment that they were put in American custody.
So you're afraid that real terrorists will go because of those policies. And one more, Claude, Newburyport, Massachusetts. Claude, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'd just like to say that Mr. Cheney's role as the prophet of doom seems to fit him very comfortably because he returns to it time after time for political gain. Ultimately, by warning us of this impeding danger that could happen and blaming the Democrats for it, basically positioned his party for the potential windfall in case such attack should happen. So, and also very dangerous because it leaves open the possibility for political manipulation of our political system by Al-Qaeda and the likes. But also, I'd like to make just another quick point. During World War II, Nazi doctors conducted experiments on innocent people and using the pretext of, gaining scientific knowledge from it. And ethically, we were bound not to use whatever information they gained from these horrible acts because we are moral people. And I would make an analogy between that and gaining information, whatever this information could, however valuable it was, using such means. I'll take my answer off the air.
Claude, we've got it. Thank you very much. Of course, Dick Cheney says it was not torture, and it kept the country safe for 7.5 years. Jane Mayer, what about the notion? I mean, he says it kept the country safe for 7.5 years. Now he is indeed, as Claude says, kind of setting it up. If there is an attack, Dick Cheney has already warned us that Obama has made us less safe. Is there a political win? Is he looking for, to roll snake eyes here? Here comes the attack, and there's a big political win?
It does seem to be kind of setting up a bit of a political trap. It's also, again,
his argument is really misleading, I think, to say that what he's trying to make it look like is that it's, as he has said, is it's just liberals that oppose torture and Democrats who oppose torture. That is just so absolutely not true, as even the hearings that took place in the Senate yesterday showed. The two people who were opposing the Cheney worldview, one was a lawyer in the Bush administration, Philip Zelikow, who is Republican. The other was Ali Soufan, an apolitical, lifelong, hard-nosed law and order advocate who happens to be an FBI agent who's been working counterterrorism for many years. The people who oppose torture have been military people who think this dishonors the United States and weakens the United States, and that history has shown it's ineffective. They are law enforcement people who think we've got a great criminal justice system and we shouldn't break our own laws. There are plenty of Republican lawyers in the Bush administration. And, you know, part of what the reason I wrote my book, The Dark Side, was to tell the story of all the people on the inside of the Bush administration who fought this kind of unknown battle, pushing back. This was a real crucible. It was about the soul of the country, as they saw it. There was James Comey, the number two lawyer in the Justice Department during the Bush administration, I mean, who pushed really hard against what Cheney was trying to do. And they found him so intimidating that at one point, Comey and an ally, Jack Goldsmith, also a Republican lawyer, resorted to talking in codes because they were really afraid they were being wiretapped, possibly by Cheney's own people, because of this. They felt that they were up against kind of this really dark worldview that they thought was wrong. It's not a partisan battle. It's an American battle, and it's about, you know, what kind of country we want to be. Another proof of that is take a look at the last political election. We had both the Republican and the Democratic candidate oppose torture.
Mona Charon, you're a conservative, but you're watching and thinking as all this rolls forward. Do you really welcome Dick Cheney to come back with all the pretty much the very same principles and outlook that he held during those 8 years of the Bush administration? Or, you know, have we learned? Is it time to push on? I mean, when you look back on coercive interrogation, are you thinking to yourself, maybe it's right to put that behind us now?
First of all, there have been so many things said during this hour that are way over the top. We've been describing
the
Bush administration as, you know, a bunch of torquemadas who were engaged in a widespread regime of torture.
Jane was just pointing out many in the administration who were not favoring torture.
Well, but the callers and Jane Mayer and others, it was this dark period in our history. Look,
well, there was a lot of torture. I mean, it's been outlined. It's been spelled out in numbers. Number of waterboardings. I mean, it's
the number of waterboardings of three individuals. Okay, and it has not been done since 2003. And each waterboarding, each one of those instances was every time water was put in the nose of one of those three men. It was not sessions of waterboarding. Okay, leaving that aside, look, there is still a very important debate that does need to go on, is arguably going on in this country about it. Bart Gellman said earlier, you know, that he thought that a little bit of the argument was a little bit too simple, you know, saying, well, it never works. And because there is evidence that in certain situations it does work. Now, but we need to have the debate about it. We need to hear from the people who say, look, we tried the softer techniques and those didn't work, and then we went into the harsher ones. And again, it was...
But haven't we been hearing, and didn't we hear just the opposite of that just yesterday, Mona?
Yes, we did, because the hearing was stacked for the, you know, in favor of those who had a particular point of view.
It was Condoleezza Rice's...
There are others who had other points of view, including Nancy Pelosi, who agreed, you know, who asked when she was briefed on this in 2002 whether there was anything more that the Congress could be doing to support this kind of thing. So, you know, there needs to be an open debate about whether it is ever advisable to use these kinds of techniques, whether a ticking time bomb scenario might justify it, and so forth. So there needs to be this kind of an open debate.
But, Mona, what I'm trying to ask you is, look, you're a Republican supporter. Looking forward, do you think, I mean, we've learned a lot already. Do you think if you had another Republican administration, you should go right back to the Bush-Cheney standard on coercive interrogation? Or have we?
I think that there, even despite the huge outcry and sort of one-sided presentation of this issue that we've had over the last several months, you still find that 50% of the American people say that they are not opposed to this kind of thing in certain circumstances, which shows that there is still a large constituency out there that believes it did protect us, it did keep us safe during a very, very difficult period. Mm.
Let's put it to the people. Peter, Newport, Vermont. You're on the air, Peter.
Yes, sir. I am a former Army interrogator. I spent 13 years doing it, and I am incensed by any reference to torture as an interrogation technique. I believe that no debate is called for in this on this topic, because to debate it is to insult the qualifications of every trained interrogator.
But what do you mean? You mean that it was not torture that happened, or we should use it or should not use it? What do you mean?
We should not use it. We absolutely should not use it. The very first bit of training that you get in Army interrogator school is the laws of land warfare, Geneva Hague Conventions, and every violation that has been reported, most notably Abu Ghraib, where I was, in 2003, 2004, it qualifies, in my view, as illegal. Now, not glossing over.
You were at Abu Ghraib during the abuse there, Peter, or not?
I was not there. I witnessed no abuse. Okay. That was in a different part of the prison. My unit was there. I kind of had a peripheral role in the goings on there. I witnessed no abuse by any Army interrogator. The abuse is, I'm getting off my point.
But you don't want torture. You don't want to be associated with it. Why do you think Abu Ghraib happened? You put it a few bad apples or Dick Cheney, who's out there talking now?
Number one, it was the MPs that did it, not the MI people.
Mm-hmm.
The military intelligence people did not do that.
Mm-hmm.
We are better trained than that. If I might return to my point.
Yeah.
It is an insult to any interrogator, anyone who's been through interrogation school, anyone who has actually done it in the field, to suggest that torture is necessary in order to extract information. The way to extract information from a source is to develop rapport with that source, and I define rapport as the condition that exists between interrogator and source, in which the source believes it is in his own best interest to cooperate with the interrogator.
So what do you say to Dick Cheney, who says there's a place for this sometimes, it wasn't torture, and we better be careful or we'll make ourselves less safe if we push it all aside?
Hogwash. Period. Hogwash.
Peter, thanks for your call. Mona, our time grows short. Let me ask you a practical political question. Is it good for the Republican Party to have Dick Cheney out there with this line? Is this going to be part of the GOP future?
It is not part of the GOP future, but it is always helpful to have a vigorous debate and not to roll over. The fact is that Cheney has a case to make. A lot of American people agree with it. Many will not. But I think the tendency to say that he really ought to just, you know, crawl away and be quiet and wait to be prosecuted is not right.
Maybe not. Maybe he's not done politically. Could you see a Palin Cheney ticket?
No.
He's only 68.
The Republican Party is at its low ebb, and there will be a new leadership that will emerge, and it will not be any of the names that are currently circulating. But that does not mean that Cheney's arguments should be dismissed, or that we should. The problem is that it has been so one-sided, the arguments that have been made, and we do need to hear the other point of view.
Of course, we heard them for a long time. Bart Gellman, where do you see this going? The former vice president has built up a very big head of steam now in all of his media appearances. Where does this go? What does he do with it?
Well, I think it depends on how successful he is in extracting more information, in framing the public debate on the issue of safety and on trying to demonstrate that harsh methods, quote unquote, worked. And I understand Peter's outrage. I've talked to quite a few service interrogators and I'm friends with one of them. And He represents the accurately, that's the point of view, that torture is over the line and unnecessary. My point earlier was that morals and laws exist in order to restrain us in our impulses, even when it would be in our interest to cross the line. And there are certain there are degrees and degrees. Even FBI and Army interrogators use various forms of coercion. That is to say, you better cooperate, or you'll face worse charges, or they're all
that's
kinds of
coercion.
Bad things that can
happen
to you.
I mean, to be fair to Peter, he was saying, no, we don't want to cross that line. Our time is so short. Jane Mayer, do you think Cheney can pull out a win here? I mean, he was out of office. He's back.
I hope that it results. I think it shows that this issue is not finished, and I hope it results in some kind of national hearings or independent inquiry or something that allows the country to educate itself more fully and come to consensus on this.
Dick Cheney's got the game on again, though. In what direction, we don't know. Jane Mayer, author of The Dark Side. Jane, thank you very much for being with us today.
Great to be with you.
Mona Charon, nationally syndicated columnist. Thank you for joining us, Mona.
You're welcome.
And Bart Gellman, author of Angler, the Dick Cheney Vice Presidency. Thank you very much for being here, Bart.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.